Support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Tracy Ray from the employment law firm of Baron Liebman. Tracy says that OPB sponsorship is a great way to support the community and connect with Baron Liebman's clients.
This is Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. We end today with a story of a Portlander named Joel Beal. He served in the U.S. Marines from 2006 to 2010, including a deployment to Iraq. After he left the Marines, he worked as a mechanic and a technician repairing wind turbines. Then came Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Beal felt called to join that fight, and a year ago, that's exactly what he did. He helped form what became known as the Chosen Company, made up of foreign fighters attached to Ukraine's 59th Motorized Brigade. As reported by the military media outlet Task and Purpose, Beal was killed in combat in October, 6 months after he began his service. We're going to hear more about Joel Beal's life right now from his former partner. We've agreed to not use their name for security reasons. I just want to say, first of all, to acknowledge that this month marks what I understand would have been your third anniversary with Joel. I just want to say, first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss, and I'm very grateful you agreed to come in to talk about your story and his. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
How did the two of you meet?
We met through a friend, and he agreed to help me fix my car and change my spark plugs.
In that first meeting?
It wasn't our first meeting. We'd met before, but that's started to be how we got together. Yeah.
You said yes. I'd love a free fix of my car.
I said I had some car problems, and he said, oh, I can help you with that. And he came over, and I paid him with a six-pack of Guinness and some Marlboro Reds. And
did it feel? Did it feel sort of like a date from the beginning?
No. I liked what I saw.
Why? Why'd you like him?
He was so funny, and he was always willing to help people, and very thoughtful, and yeah, he was a really deep thinker.
How'd you realize that? How'd you come to see him as a deep thinker?
Probably he would just think for a long time about something and then come back around to it. And he was always thinking with his furrowed brow and very like serious person. Huh. But also funny at the same time.
I mentioned that he served a tour in Iraq with the Marines. How much did he talk to you about his military service?
Not too much. I ask questions sometimes, but that's not something that a lot of people like to talk about.
Yeah, and it was the same for him.
What do you mean?
That it wasn't something that he liked to talk about.
I don't know. It's a sensitive topic for a lot of people, and I don't know how to answer it. There's so many, you know, unanswered questions that I have, that more things I'd wished I'd asked about with him that we didn't get a chance to talk about. I thought, you know, we'd have more time.
When the two of you got together, did it ever occur to you that he would go off to fight in another war?
We talked about it when
before,
the war started.
Okay, so not before the full-scale war in Ukraine.
Well, he was dissatisfied with a lot of the things that he saw, the injustice that he saw in the world. And that was kind of a core part of his life. And so when the war kicked off in Ukraine, he wanted to go immediately, and I asked him not to.
You said he said he wanted to go immediately. So what did he say to you?
Just that it was so wrong, and he wanted to do it, and that eventually, you know, it eventually became that he would regret it for the rest of his life if he didn't go. Yeah.
What do you think he meant by that?
He was a fighter. He wanted to fight. He was dissatisfied with his military service. He no longer believed in the ideals that America had purported to be fighting for. And he wanted to fight for something that he truly wanted to like fight an oppressor and be a force of good in the world.
Oh, in a way that he didn't come to see what his role as a part of the U.S. military in Iraq in that same way.
Correct.
Huh. So on some level, that is maybe tied to, but also maybe separate from seeing yourself as a fighter. In this case, he was both a fighter, and he saw a fight that he saw as more noble than what he had taken part in.
I can't speak to how he saw it in comparison to his prior military service. But, you know, I can say he burned his Marine Corps uniform and
when he was done with his service, he burned his uniform.
Fire.
It says a lot. Huh. So the war in Ukraine starts, a full-scale war. It's worth pointing out because I think sometimes people forget it, that Russia had invaded Ukraine many years earlier, but this was a full-scale invasion. And he came to you and said, I want to fight. And you said, I asked him not to go. Can you give us a sense for what those conversations were like?
It was pretty bad, you know, begging, crying. Hmm. But, you know, about a year went by and, you know, I had his friends. We all tried to keep him home, but eventually, if you love somebody, you have to let them take their own risks and, you know, live their life, even if you don't want them to do something.
You'd been together for 2 years, am I right, before mm-hmm. he left? What kinds of plans did the two of you make for your future at that point? What was already sort of on the table for the two of you as a couple?
We definitely wanted to move in together. We were thinking about, you know, years into the future. I'm in school, so we were waiting for my school to be done, and we wanted to leave Portland, and we didn't know. We traveled the world. We talked about having kids, and, you know, so the whole thing we imagined.
It seems like you and also your friends, the sense I get is these were very serious conversations you had with Joel, where I imagine that the ultimate question was, what if you die? I imagine that it can't have not come up, the fear of or possibility of death.
I talked about it. He really didn't. He just said that he thought he could do it and that he wanted to do it regardless. And, you know, he was fearless. And I don't mean naive. Like, he was just like, I'm going to go for it. And it's what he wanted to do. It's what made him feel alive, is to fight for something and to fight for a better world. Hmm.
What do you remember about his departure?
Everything. Which part?
Where were you?
At the Portland airport. It was raining. And he was excited to go. You know, he walked off happy.
How does a non-Ukrainian actually join the fight against Russia? I mean, how do you even begin to be, for example, accepted by a foreign military? among other things, they have to make sure that you're going to, you know, not shoot them. How does it even work logistically?
There's the, you know, International Legion for the Defense of Ukraine, and they have you can literally just go on Reddit and talk to a recruiter. And the rules have changed off and on over the last few years of the war. They want people with military experience, but they will also accept people who don't have any. I feel a little bad giving people, I don't want to give a step by step. If people want to do it, they'll figure out how to do it. but yeah, you talk to a recruiter and you fly into Poland usually and take a bus or a train to the border, and someone, your recruiter, will meet you at the border and take you to the next location.
But that's not in the end what Joel did.
No. He left the Legion, the International Legion, and with a group of guys. It wasn't what he was looking for. It's my understanding that a lot of the international fighters are not well regarded by the Ukrainian soldiers. You know, they can leave whenever they want. They often turn tail as soon as the first bomb falls on them because Ukraine doesn't have air superiority. And a lot of American vets are not used to that, even if they saw combat in Afghanistan or Iraq.
They've never served in a place where they weren't in control of the skies.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. And so a lot of people flee. For that reason, because international fighters have been a bit unreliable, I won't say everybody, you know, it's obviously not everybody, they don't get put to the very front often, is what I was told.
And that's what he wanted.
And he wanted to be on the front, yeah. He wanted to be fighting. He was ready for trench warfare. and so him and some guys, they left the Legion. Somebody had some contacts in the Ukrainian army, and this company was formed up that became Chosen Company, and they were doing what they wanted to do, assaulting Russian trenches and kicking ass. Hmm.
What did you learn about his fellow soldiers?
I've learned they're all crazy guys. You know, you don't do that. You don't put yourself in that position as just a regular, normal person. It is normal to not want to go to war. And as one of them said to me, you know, you're not crazy for not wanting to fight a war.
You're not defending your homeland either.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not fighting for your country either.
Yeah.
Where'd they come from?
I mean, was it
not just the U.S.?
Yeah, literally all over the world.
Like where?
Germany, Sweden, Australia, Ireland, Britain, countries in South America, all over. Taiwan. There's Belarusian fighters who are pro-Ukrainian. There's Russians who leave Russia to go fight for Ukraine. You know, they're not all in that company necessarily, but there's people coming from all over the world.
How much are you able to talk to Joel about what his life was like on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, we talked morning and night.
Huh.
Yeah. He was very, very secure. So I didn't know. I didn't know where he was. I had an idea, but I would see little things like, "Oh, here are the cats who are in our camp," you know. And
he would send you pictures.
He'd send me pictures of the cats. There's lots of kittens and dogs, and he'd tell me little things like, "Oh, we went and did an exploratory mission looking for supplies in these abandoned buildings," or, you know, a truck blew up in front of me while we were on a mission today. So it did vary from I met a cat to some stuff blew up.
And that was about all he could tell you in terms of what he was actually doing, was some stuff blew up.
He might have been able to tell me more, but he was always very secretive isn't the right word, but in order to keep everybody secure, there's so many details that need to be kept under wraps until, I don't know, a certain amount of time has passed, they change positions, whatever. You don't want to give away too many identifying details, even on a, like, secure messaging app, because you don't know.
Where did all of his gear, uniforms, weapons, communications technology, where did all of that come from?
He brought his plates for his vest from here. But like the weapons, they get them there. They're issued. It's like a real military. They're issued weapons.
From the Ukrainian military.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good. A lot of what they were getting, you know, it's stuff that's seen heavy fighting for many years. They don't have brand new gear at all. He had a grenade launcher, a GP-25, that would barely load, and hammering in grenades with the hilt of his knife to get a round off in combat. Like, that's bad. Yeah, he was also, he had a little workshop in Ukraine where he would help people fix their guns or sew up their clothes or sew up their gear. He cleared out a room they called the Goblin Workshop, and it also became a hangout room for everybody. And the people would come and go and wait for their stuff to be fixed. And yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking right now about Joel David Beal. The retired Marine from Portland chose to join the fight in Ukraine against Russia. He was killed in combat there about 6 months ago. We were talking to his former partner. You mentioned that a lot of the American soldiers or former American service members were not used to being in a place where they didn't have air superiority. In a lot of the coverage I've seen and reports from people there, including many Ukrainian soldiers, that they talk so much about drones, often Russian drones, but some of their own as well. Was that true for Joel as well? I'm just curious how much he talked about drones.
He didn't talk about drones, but they were an ever-present reality in the fighting. They have drone footage of, I mean, they don't, they, it's my understanding that barely a mission is done in Ukraine without a drone. You send them up ahead, you have them flying up ahead of everybody to go do basically scouting, and then on the mission, you have drones. After the mission, you have drones, like, just to see everything. So
they're ever present.
Yes. And then you have the FPV drones, like the first person view drone that you can fly. People fly them into tanks. People blow them up in soldiers' faces, drop grenades on them, whatever. Yes, it's everywhere.
What did you hear from Joel about how foreign soldiers were seen by Ukrainian soldiers or by Ukrainian civilians?
People were very glad that they were there fighting, and there, I mean, it kind of depended. Like with the International Legion, in the town nearby where they weren't too happy with the foreigners being there, because they were, you know, not, they weren't helping. They were, a lot of those people were, I don't know, starting fights, getting drunk, doing stupid stuff that wasn't about fighting the war. So of course these people are unhappy.
They were seen as sort of mercenaries or thrill seekers. Or
not mercenaries, but like there's people who go to conflicts and they want to live out some version of themselves and also just take. You know, they want to, they're not who they say they are. They are running away from something. They're not there with Ukraine's best interest, which is another reason why Joel wanted to leave the Legion. But after he left, when he would meet Ukrainians, they were glad that and honored that people, that foreigners were fighting for them, for their country.
How did you hear that he had been killed?
His mom called me, or she sent me a text message, and then I called her. They had called her, the Ukrainian military had called her the night before. Hmm.
When an American service member is killed in combat on behalf of their country, there's this whole ritual that's established, notification of next of kin, which sounds like it did happen in this case. bringing the body back, the option for a military funeral, among other things. What happened with Joel?
He did have a military funeral in Ukraine. It was a double funeral, him and another guy who'd been killed some days before, I believe. And it was in a beautiful church in Kyiv. I forget which one, but they sent me pictures and videos. And then they cremated him, and he's interred in a military cemetery there.
Did you want to find out any details about how he was killed?
Yeah, of course. I did, yeah. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible to not know, because you're just imagining every horrible situation that your mind can think of when you don't know.
Were you able to find out enough to at least put your worst fears to rest?
Yeah. It took about 6 months, but I did. Was able to finally talk to somebody. You know, you have to wait for like security clearance, basically. And you know, they're also busy. All those guys, they stayed in combat. They were around Avdiivka, which was it was the most intense fighting any of them had seen in Ukraine, from what I gathered. And it's, you know, they were able to have a little funeral, but then they had to keep fighting, you know, so it's, they're at war. They're not the easiest people to talk to. So I had to wait, yeah.
How much support have you had since Joel was killed?
Oh, my friends and my family are really, they've really rallied for me. Hmm. And yeah, really good.
It's a reality of this country that even when U.S. troops were at war in Afghanistan and then in Iraq, the effects on families back here was very uneven. It's a very small percentage of military families in this country. And so life went on for so many Americans, you know, from 2002 for more than a decade. But the fact remains that we did know that we were a country at war and that there were families of service members who were serving overseas. It's really different what you've experienced. I'm just curious what it was like, both for the 6 months when he was fighting and the 6 months since then, to be a Portlander going around with a loved one fighting in a war, actively fighting in an active war, but nobody else around here basically was experiencing that. What was that like?
Oh, it was bad. It was pretty bad. As Joel would say, I was straight up not having a good time. It's really like a brain breaking a little bit. And I didn't want to tell a lot of people because I didn't want to hear anyone's bad opinions or ignorant opinions about the war.
So out of self-preservation, you were even more isolated.
Yeah, a little bit, because people would think I was joking, and then they'd need all kind of details and then want me to explain. If I ever said it, I had to explain so many things, like about the war, about why he went and how I feel about it. And it's like, this is way too invasive for me. This is too much.
Well, it does make me wonder. I mean, we heard about your story and reached out to you and said, hey, how would you feel about talking? And you thought about it and then said yes. Why?
Because he really was such an amazing person, and I just wanted more people to know that he existed. Hmm. Yeah, a lot of people after he died, like if I said, oh yeah, my boyfriend was fighting in Ukraine and he got blown up, they think I'm joking.
I mentioned at the beginning that you asked if we could not use your name for security reasons, and we agreed. Can you give us a sense for what you're worried about? Why you feel it's important to maintain anonymity?
Because there are Russian trolls online who go after foreign fighters' families. They issue death threats. They, you know, might try to hack them. They harass them online. I don't want any part of that. I don't want anyone to have to experience that.
For so much of the time when Joel was fighting and after he was killed, there was a raging debate in the U.S. about whether or not we would provide more support for Ukraine, more military support. And just recently, that happened. The House had a kind of political breakthrough, and the president signed it. What went through your mind when you heard that Ukraine was going to get more U.S. aid?
I was glad, but it's still not enough. It's been 6 months. It was about 6 months, I think, between or since the last since they'd last received aid, and it really hurt. It really hurt the fighters. It really hurt the war, and Russia's been able to make advances. So, I think that if Ukraine is not supported by other countries, by the United States, by countries in Europe, that Russia could win, and Russia's not going to stop advancing, and it'll be another country next, and it'll be an even bigger war that, you know, gotta spend more money now so we don't spend even more money later. And, you know, the loss of more life and the spread of fascism across the globe.
Thank you very much for coming, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to the former partner of Joel Beal, a U.S. Marine veteran from Portland who died fighting in Ukraine about 6 months ago. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to bring you a conversation about history, politics, service, and aging with Barbara Roberts, the first woman to be elected Oregon governor. If you don't want to miss any of our shows, you can listen on the NPR app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our nightly rebroadcast is at 8 p.m. Thanks very much for tuning in to Think Out Loud on OPB and KLCC. I'm Dave Miller. We'll be back tomorrow.
Think Out Loud is supported by Steve and Jan Oliva, the Rosie Tucker Charitable Trust, Ray and Marilyn Johnson, and the Susan Hammer Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation.